My last apartment wasn't exactly in an upscale neighborhood either, and no one ever tried to abduct me.
He motions to my outfit.
Were you dressed like this?
Usually I change before I leave. Tonight's an exception. Bancroft makes a right and pulls into the underground lot. I've never been down here before, since the only other time I've been in his vehicle was when we moved me into his apartment. I hope this isn't some kind of omen. He stops at the valet, but tells the attendant he'll park himself and backs skillfully into a spot. He lets me get out of the car on my own.
Not going to throw me over your shoulder this time?
He looks me over. Beyond being angry, his gaze is hot. It makes my skin tingle, which is annoying.
Would you like me to?
No. I follow him to the lobby. He angles his body in such a way that I'm partially eclipsed by his broadness as we pass the security guards.
Worried someone's gonna judge you for being seen with me?
I mutter. He gives me an icy glare, slides his key card over the elevator sensor that takes us to the penthouse floor, and ushers me inside. It's dedicated, so very few people use it. The elevator ride to his condo is full of more silence and tension. I'm relieved that we don't run into anyone in the hallway, particularly Miss Blackwood. I've seen her a few times coming and going, and she's always polite, but in that way rich people are when they really think they're better than you. Which is exactly the reason I've kept this job a secret, because I've grown up in an environment where that's the rule, not the exception. Bancroft lets the door close with a heavy slam. He throws his keys on the counter and kicks off his shoes, then starts down the hall.
Where are you going?
I call after him.
To my room.
I plant a fist on my hip.
That's it?
He unbuttons the cuffs of his shirt.
I'd like to get changed.
You came all the way to my work to glare at me and be pissy and drive me home, just to go to bed?
He strides back down the hall toward me, eyes flashing. Jesus, why is he so hot when he's pissed off?
No. I came to your work so I could see for myself exactly how involved your lie was. I came to your work because I'm worried about the location and your safety. I came to your work because I wanted to see you perform. Now I would like to get changed. And I think you should too.
What if I don't want to?
I'm being a combative brat right now. I think it's because I'm scared of this conversation that I've ruined any possibility of this being more.
I don't think I can have this conversation with you while you're dressed like...
He flails his hands around, gesturing at my outfit. I jump my chest out. I'm rocking some insane cleavage. This outfit doesn't leave much to the imagination. His eyes drop, and I have a hard time coming back up to my face.
Like what?
I bark.
Like this.
He snaps back.
And what am I dressed like?
I know the answer to this question, but I want to hear him say it. I want a reason to go off on him, because he's a damn hypocrite if he can go out on a date with someone like Brittany, who wears skimpy, slutty clothes on purpose, and get his balls all twisted because my costume is revealing. I mean, there is a lot of skin showing, and half my butt is on display some of the time, but it's not like I have a full coverage option for this gig, and it's not as if I'd wear it off the stage. Bancroft's face is red. His eyes close and stay that way for a while before they open again.
Everyone was looking at you.
I don't get why he never seems to answer a question directly.
I throw my hands up. They're supposed to. I'm performing.
But why do you have to wear this? Why do you have to look so...
He takes a step closer, hands clenched at his sides. I lift my chin in defiance, challenging him to say what I know he wants to.
So what?
So fucking hot.
It's more growl than words. And not the words I expect. At all. I expected him to say slutty, or like a streetwalker, or a lady of the night.
I'm supposed to look hot. It's how I make money right now. Is this another reason why you're so angry? Because I'm too provocative?
Yes. No. You lied. This... you... you're driving me insane. I want...
Bancroft's breath leaves him on a hard pant. I have no idea what's going on. 2 minutes ago, he was pissed because I lied. And now he's mad because I'm hot.
You want what?
We're almost nose to nose, me pushed up on my tiptoes, Bancroft leaning down so his shoulders are hunched. His hands flex at his sides.
You. Fuck. I want.
Is that supposed to make sense?
Sweet Christ, is he saying what I think he is? His voice drops to a gravelly whisper.
I want you.
He admitted it. Out loud. Thank God. He doesn't make a move to take me, though. So I push what I hope is his very last button.
So, what are you going to do about it?
You can't make anything easy, can you?
His hand shoots out, fingers sliding into my hair, twisting into the strands. His grip tightens as he tilts my head back, and then his mouth is on mine. It's nothing like the time he accidentally kissed me at the engagement party. If that kiss was a fizzled-out candle, this one is an entire store of firecrackers going off at once. Weeks of pent-up tension explode as his tongue pushes past my lips and he groans into my mouth. I latch onto his hair because there's no way we're stopping this now that it's started. In the back of my head, reason tells me this is a seriously bad idea. I still live here. He's angry at me for lying to him. I'm angry at myself for caring what everyone thinks and for getting myself into this kind of situation. We need to have a discussion, one with words and some logic. But logic has gone out the window, jumped the 20-plus stories in a free fall. Sweet button of lust in my panties, this man can do amazing things with his tongue. I bet his talents extend far beyond mouth skills, and I'm pretty sure I'm about to find out if this is true. Bancroft slides his hand under my skirt. He doesn't actually have to do much work to accomplish that, since it's so damn short. He grabs my glitter panty-covered right ass cheek and pulls me against him. Like the last time I ended up with his tongue in my mouth, I can feel his ample hard-on against my stomach. I can't wait to get my hands on it. Better yet, I can't wait to ride it. Screw worrying about arguments and conversations. Forget worrying about having a place to live. I have a free hand, so I mimic him and grab his ass like he is mine. His grip tightens, and he shifts his hips, seeking friction. I can totally relate to that need. He breaks the kiss long enough to say,
"I want you in my bed."
I groan around his tongue, which is already in my mouth again.
"If you just stayed in my bed that first night I came home, we could have done this a whole lot sooner."
"I slept in there every night you were gone." He holds on to my hair and disengages from my mouth.
"You what?"
Oh, shit. Maybe I shouldn't be admitting this. I slept in your bed? It comes out as more of a question than a statement.
"What else did you do in my bed, besides sleeping?"
His lips hover just above mine. I can't get to them, though, because he's still gripping my hair. Not hard, just firmly. I played hide and seek with Franny.
I whisper because it's true.
Anything else?
Like what? I bite my lip. His nose brushes my cheek. His lips at my ear.
Did you get off in my bed?
Yes. I moan.
Fuck.
He bites my earlobe and I gasp. His hand drifts down my side.
How?
I suck in a breath when his fingers graze the edge of my panties and he follows the fabric to the inside of my thigh.
I want you to tell me how.
He murmurs. How I got off? I ask for clarification because I'm a little distracted by his fingers right now.
Did you finger fuck yourself while you thought about me?
His tongue sweeps along the side of my neck. I make a groaning sound. It's supposed to be yes, but I don't think it comes out as a word. He cups me through my panties.
Did you?
I nod as much as I can, since he's still fisting my hair with his free hand.
How often?
Every night, I admit. He slips his hand down the front of my panties. His fingers glide over my clit, and then he slides a single finger inside.
Like this?
I nod vigorously and grab onto his shoulders when my knees threaten to give out. But harder and more.
More fingers.
His lips move across my cheek again, and he backs up until his eyes are on mine. This man is combustibly hot.
Yes.
He adds another finger, pumping slowly. God, his fingers are long and thick, a lot longer and thicker than my own. His lips touch mine as he asks,
How's this?
Faster, please, and harder. His smile is absolutely sinister.
Listen to those manners.
But he does what I ask, pumping harder and faster. I cry out, grabbing onto his shirt to keep upright. But Aina, the word comes out tortured.
I can't wait to hear what that sounds like when you're coming all over my fingers.
Fuck, shit, oh my god. I want your cock. So much for those manners. Bane chuckles.
There's that naughty mouth I love so much.
He kisses me hard and keeps moving his fingers, picking up speed until I'm trembling as the orgasm rolls through me. And then his hands are gone, and I find myself pinned to the wall by Bancroft's hips. He starts grinding, and of course I do the same. Yanking his shirt over his head, I run my hands over his chest. It's an amazing chest. So solid. So defined.
Like what you see?
He asks. So much.
Me too.
He grabs the hem of my dress. If we can even really call it that. Mostly it's scraps of material sewn together. And pulls it over my head. My bra and panties are white and glittery, as is pretty damn typical and burlesque. Bancroft drops to his knees, face level with my crotch. He looks up and flicks the little jewel at my navel.
I fucking love this.
Then he skims lower to my hips and drags my glitter panties down my legs.
Fucking yes.
Apparently Bancroft approves of my grooming techniques. I'm still pulsing from the orgasm I just had. He lifts his head enough to meet my gaze, his tongue sweeping across his bottom lip.
You know what I'm gonna do now?
The anticipation is exhilarating. I have a feeling I know, but I want to hear him say it so I can find out exactly how impolite he can be. Based on his behavior so far, I'm thinking he can be a dirty boy. I shake my head,
I might also bite my lip and arch my back, so my pretty parts are closer to his lips.
No?
Bancroft runs his palms heavily down the outside of my thighs.
You don't know?
I give my head another shake. Why don't you tell me? The grin that curves the right side of his mouth makes me squeeze my legs together. It distracts Bancroft, drawing his gaze down to the part of my body that will happily take his attention. He rubs his nose over my pelvis, the softest brush. His eyes lift to mine again.
I'm going to tongue-fuck your pretty pussy until you come all over my face.
He pauses for a second.
Would you like that?
Yes, please.
So fucking polite.
He hooks a thumb behind the back of my leg and lifts it, resting it over his shoulder, and then he starts licking. There is nothing soft and sweet about the way Bancroft eats me. Each stroke is fast and aggressive and... Oh, God. Is he growling? Oh, yeah, that's definitely a growl. If this is what foreplay is like with him, I can't wait to get to the sex part. I grab onto his hair, because it seems like a good place to hold. Even with the way he has me spread open for him and pinned against the wall, I need a solid anchor. My dancer background gives me better balance than most, but it's a lot to ask for me to stay upright like this while he tongue-fucks an orgasm out of me, especially since my knees are already watery from the first one. They start to buckle, which isn't much of a surprise with the way he's hoovering my clit. I make a bunch of random noises with his name thrown in there on a groan. And then I'm coming. Again. It's a knock-me-out, steal-my-soul kind of orgasm. When the white lights of heaven fade out and I can breathe and see again, I realize I'm on the floor, staring up at the hall light, which is blinding me. And Bancroft is still going. He's a pussy-looking machine. It sends me into overdrive. I can't stop the sensations from overriding every logical thought. Not that there were many left, anyway. I think I'm in love with this man's tongue. If he's as talented with his cock as he is with this part of his body, I may actually start a new religion. The Church of Bancock. I laugh, slightly deliriously, and then gasp as the graze of teeth sends me tumbling over the edge with orgasm number 3. I didn't even know it was possible to have this many consecutively. My eyes roll up, and my vision disappears into a haze of black and white and stars as I arch, pushing myself against his mouth. When I finally regain some muscle control, I crack a lid and realize I'm in the middle of a doorway. Craning my neck, I discover I'm looking at the legs of Bancroft's bed. There are a few items of clothing under it. One of them might be a pair of my underpants. Or some socks. His cleaner obviously doesn't do the best job. The rough scrape of his stubble against my clit draws my attention back to Bancroft. His hair is a mess. Because my hands have been in it. His lips are swollen because he's been sucking on my clit. We've managed to make it from one end of the hall to the other, our end point rather convenient. It's like a round of curling cunnilingus. His grin is full of dirty promises. At least we made it to the bedroom. He gets up on his hands and knees, slides one arm under my back, and lifts me off the floor. In 2 fluid steps, he crosses to the bed and tosses me on the mattress. I bounce once before he's on top of me, settling between my thighs, which have parted for him like magic. His mouth is on mine again as he swivels his hips. Oh, God. I can feel him right there, rubbing on me. This is going to be the best sex of my life. I can tell already. The pre-sex orgasms are a fairly good indicator of that. He breaks the kiss, his lips moving down my neck, teeth nipping, tongue sweeping.
I can't wait to fuck you,
he murmurs in my ear. I should suck you first, don't you think? I suggest. He stops with the kissing and lifts his head so he can meet my gaze. My cheeks are probably pink.
Say that again.
I want to say no, but with the way he's looking at me, it's difficult not to follow through. I should suck you. I draw out the word suck, making it sound liquid. His grin is just as lascivious as my words.
With that pretty, naughty mouth.
He sweeps his thumb along my bottom lip before he slips it just inside. So, of course, I suck, because clearly that's what he wants me to do. And it mimics what I'm about to do. I get to see his cock again, up close and personal this time. I'm pretty damn excited about that. I give him a little bite. His expression goes dark.
I hope you're not planning on doing that when it's my cock in that sweet mouth.
I swirl my tongue around the tip of his thumb. Pretty sure I'm going to have to unhinge my jaw to get my lips around that beast. His grin is almost a smirk.
You don't think you can handle it?
Let's bring it up here and see if it fits. Bancroft pushes up on his arms, his smile deliciously dark. I raise a brow and lick my lips. He mutters something unintelligible and shoves his pants over his hips, kicking them off. I glance down at his body and notice he's still wearing his socks. They're black and pulled halfway up his shins. You need to take those off first.
What?
Your socks. They need to go. He gives me a look.
You've already had 3 orgasms and you're worried about my socks.
He tries to straddle me, but I put a hand up to stop him. I'm not putting your cock in my mouth until those socks come off. I'll do it myself if it's too difficult for you. Before I have a chance to react, he flips me over onto my stomach and gives my ass a slap.
I've been waiting for a reason to do that.
I cry out, but it's not in pain. It's surprise. And then I feel the sting of his teeth on the opposite cheek before I'm flipped over again.
And that as well.
He straddles me so his knees are on either side of my chest. I chance a peek down. The socks have disappeared. I grin and then check Bancroft out. Now, I've never given a blowjob like this, but I'm thinking if it works, it'll be pretty damn hot. He's hovering over me, his cock fisted in his hand. Sweet Lord, this man makes me want to give the most amazing blowjob of my life. Now, here's the problem. Bancroft is very well endowed. I'm kind of serious about having to unhinge my jaw. So this angle might actually be preferable because I don't think it allows for deeper penetration. But I'm just guessing. Fingers crossed I'm right about this. He angles his erection down so that the tip is close to my chin. Flecks of glitter decorate the head, which isn't a surprise. My glitter panties and bra leave a magical trail everywhere. He keeps pushing down until the tip of his cock hits my bottom lip, as if he's knocking on the door to my mouth, looking to get in there. Then he rubs it across like it's lip gloss. Or dick gloss, as it were. I smile, but manage to suppress a giggle. His expression is intense, his lips parting along with mine as he shifts his hips forward and the head slides inside. So far, so good. He groans when I press my tongue forward to circle the tip.
I can't even tell you how many times I've thought about this.
I hum my acknowledgement. I can't actually form words with his cock in my mouth, And while this certainly is something I've thought about too, I have my doubts it's to the same degree as he did. I definitely fantasized about the pussy eating and the sex we're going to have as soon as I'm done sucking on his lollipop. I keep my eyes on his face as he bites his lip and pushes in a little further.
How much you think you can take?
That's a great question. One I don't have an answer to, since I've never tried to get something this big in my mouth at one time.
Let's find out,
I say around the head. It's a little garbled, but he seems to understand. He eases in another inch, and I run my hands up the outside of his incredibly muscular thighs. They're like tree trunks. I move around the back so I can grab his ass. His naked ass. It's so firm. I lift my head as he pushes in farther still, another inch. He swears when I squeeze his ass and pull him even deeper. The hand that isn't wrapped around his cock slides into my hair. He isn't trying to get me to choke on him. Instead, he cups the back of my head, helping to hold it up, which is nice of him, since I'd be doing a lot of craning otherwise. I start with some suction, which gets another dirty curse out of him.
You're fucking gorgeous with my cock in your mouth, you know that?
His praise makes me want to see exactly how deep I can take him. I open wider, take more until his thumb touches my lip and the head hits the back of my throat. I hold onto his hips and ease him back, then do it again, taking him deeper on the next wet, suctioned stroke. I do it maybe 2 or 3 more times before he lets go of my hair.
That's enough.
He wraps his hand around his cock and pulls out of my mouth, covering the head. For the first time ever, I actually want to keep going. I was just getting started. I might even be whining. He brushes my bottom lip with his thumb.
Another time, I'd love to finish in that incredible mouth of yours.
He releases his cock and reaches down. Hooking his hands under my arms, he pulls me up so I'm not face to cock with him anymore. He's still straddling my hips as he leans down and kisses me, tongue sweeping my mouth. I wiggle around, trying to get my legs out from between his without causing any potential damage to his delicious dick. Breaking the kiss, he sits back, running his fingertips over my breasts, circling my nipples before he drags them down my sides. We're getting to the good part. Not that all the other parts haven't been good, but this is what I've been waiting for, fantasizing about even, since the first night he accidentally kissed me. He draws a circle around my navel, then travels a straight path down to the crest of my pelvis. If he would just get in between my legs, it would make this a hell of a lot easier. Easing farther back on the bed, he smooths his hands along the outside of my thighs until he reaches my knees. Hooking his fingers underneath them, he encourages me to bend them, then follows the contour of my calves until he reaches my ankles.
How flexible are you?
Pretty flexible. Why? He raises my legs, keeping them pressed together as he rests the soles of my feet against his chest.
I'm just trying to decide what position I want to fuck you in.
Oh, good Lord. This man and his mouth. These weeks of flirty banter and mostly civilized behavior seem to be evaporating in the face of orgasms and naked promise. Do I have a say in how I'm positioned? I mean for it to be all snark, but I fail, because it comes out all soft and breathy instead.
If you want one, sure.
Bancroft runs his hands over my shins. When he reaches my knees, he reverses the movement, his wide palms wrapping around my ankles again. His gaze lifts to meet mine.
Open for me.
Despite it being an order and not a request, I'm still inclined to oblige him. I mean, he tongue-fucked me across the floor. I've already come like my clit is the central location for fireworks on the 4th of July. If he would like to put that magnificent cock of his to good use by pounding another orgasm out of my pretty little pussy, I am all for it. Sometimes it's good to play coy, show a little hesitation and uncertainty. I do neither of those things. I can literally hear Bancroft's teeth grinding together as his gaze drops. I don't know exactly what it is about my grooming habits or the composition of my particular vagina that makes the deep, thick groan come out of him. But whatever it is, I'm so, so happy about it right now. I'm completely on display for him, bare for him, vulnerable. But it doesn't create any of the self-consciousness I expect, because the expression on his face is pure, unfiltered desire. He curves forward, spreading my legs farther apart, hands still wrapped around my ankles. I'm not sure what his plan is until he licks me again, one long, slow stroke of his tongue, a fast swirl, and a long, hard suck on my clit. I cry out and arch, but he's still holding my damn ankles, so I can't get away from the intensity of his mouth. He keeps me spread, his mouth on me, getting me close again. Before I fall over the edge and into the blissful abyss, he releases one of my ankles, but only one, and looks up from between my legs. Then he fists his cock.
I'm going to fuck you now, Ruby. Are you ready for that?
Oh, God, yes, please. That would be so amazing. I would love it if I could be a little less eager about the whole thing, but he's left me hanging, and all I can think about is how fantastic it's going to feel when he's filling me. His smirk tells me he knows exactly what's going on in my head. Or maybe it's my breathy tone, and the way I'm attempting to lift my hips off the bed, even though he's still holding my damn ankle. When he rubs the head of his cock over my clit, I jerk and moan. Finally letting go of my ankle, he slips his arm under my knee, pulling it up as he stretches out on top of me. I can feel him, thick and hard against my pelvis. I try to readjust our position, but I'm not having much luck. I thought you said you were going to fuck me now. I'm a little snappy. He might be more smug than necessary.
I'm getting to that. This is an exercise in patience, Ruby.
I've waited a lot of weeks for this.
So you can wait a little longer.
He eases his hips back, and the thick shaft slides over my clit, the head following. He reaches across to the nightstand, fumbling around for a second before he finds the condoms. He's quick about tearing one free and rolling it on, and then he's pushing inside. And I'm moaning, and he's groaning. The first few strokes are slow as I adjust, but those are the only ones that fall into the slow and gentle category, because after that, Bancroft's civility ceases to exist. He drills into me, hips slapping against mine fast and hard. I come, and then come again as he growls dirty things in my ear, telling me how amazing my pussy is, how it's his now, and no one else can have it but him. I like it a lot. After he comes, he collapses on top of me. Not completely. He braces his weight on his straining, twitching forearms. I don't think I've ever been so sated in my life. I'm so sweaty. I'm pretty sure there's glitter all over Bancroft's sheets. And Bancroft. I can't actually find it in me to care or do anything about it. Not that there's anything I can reasonably do anyway. One thing I've noticed with the glitter is that no matter how many times I wash things, it still hangs around after the fact. Shiny reminders of my temporary job. Does this mean you're not angry anymore? I ask when he tucks me into his side.
For now,
You have plans to be angry with me later?
I'm putting it on hold until morning.
Same. I snuggle into him, getting comfortable. We can deal with all the unsaid things later. Right now, I'm going to bask. And then sleep. And then, maybe more sex.
Chapter 18. Bliss to Bad News. Bancroft. Sex with Ruby is unlike the sex I've had in any other relationship. It's not civilized, but it's not savage either. Ruby is the ideal balance between sweetly docile and confidently naughty, and she knows exactly when one works and the other is necessary. She's fucking perfect. The biggest problem we seem to have is that our schedules don't match. She goes to bed an hour or two before I get up for my day. By the time I get home from work, she's on her way out the door or already long gone. 2 days after our initial argument, followed by the fuck of the century, I'm woken up 20 minutes before my alarm goes off to a blowjob. This time I get to come in Ruby's pretty perfect mouth. Monday is one of Ruby's days off. I go into work in the morning, but I schedule the afternoon to work from home. I don't plan to do much actual work. I plan to do Ruby, repeatedly, on any available surface. I arrive home just after 2 and find her in the kitchen, humming away, making coffee and microwave s'mores. Apparently it's her favorite thing. I wrap an arm around her waist and pull her up against me, nuzzling into her hair. Is this your version of a healthy breakfast? She turns around in my arms. Healthy, no. Breakfast, yes. Want one? That's not really what I'm hungry for. Oh, no? I shake my head and pick her up, depositing her on the counter. She's wearing her bathrobe. It's white with red flowers and made of some silky material. I'm more interested in finding out what's under here. I pull the bow at her waist and watch as the sides part, revealing taut muscles and perky nipples. She's naked and glorious. I fuck her on the counter. We spend the rest of the day in my bedroom enjoying each other. I know the second she crawls into bed with me. It doesn't matter that it's between 2 and 4 in the morning. It doesn't matter that I have to get my ass up at 5:30 and work a 12-hour day. All she has to do is press her body against mine and I'm instantly awake. We'll fuck until my alarm goes off. I stopped bothering with condoms when the second box ran out on day 4 and she assured me she's on the pill. Which also happened to be the day she decided to rehearse the dance to the song that broke me. While naked. We didn't make it past the living room floor. I have bruises on my knees from that. We don't address any of the important issues, such as how we're going to deal with the fact that she's still living here and we're sleeping together. To be quite honest, I don't want to mess with this good thing we have now that we finally have it, which is a problem, because there are things we need to figure out. I don't particularly want her to leave, but I also know that staying here indefinitely was never part of her plan. I don't want to freak her out by inviting her to move in permanently, even though it's something I've considered. It's a little premature. A week is not really enough time to make a highly informed decision regarding shacking up. But I'm really enjoying having Ruby in my bed every night. She gives incredible blowjobs. She has a naughty mouth. She likes it when I talk dirty to her. And that's just the sexual compatibility, which has nothing on how compatible we are beyond the bedroom. It's been 2 hours since I left Ruby sleeping in my bed. 4 hours since I've been inside her. I already feel as if I'm going through withdrawal. Hours have never felt more like eternity than they do right now. The more we keep doing this, the more aware I become that we really need to stop dancing around conversations and figure out what this is. There's no timeline on moving out, but I'm well aware that she's been actively seeking a new agent and that she's looking to audition for roles that will take her closer to Broadway. It's a bit of a messy situation I've gotten myself into. If I'm completely honest, I'm still a little angry at her for lying about her job, although I can understand why she did. It took me a long while to come to terms with the fact that a lot of people in my family's social sphere would never approve of my career in rugby, even though it was completely legitimate and I made an excellent salary. Her situation is admittedly different. The one thing I'm still having difficulty getting past with this entire situation is that I assumed I'd earned enough of her trust that she'd be honest with me, and I worry that she's still going to feel compelled to withhold things. Unfortunately, that conversation isn't going to happen right now because I'm sitting in my office waiting for my father to call me into a meeting. I received the call at 8 this morning, which is a time I'm usually up, but Ruby and I were pretty busy last night. And it was late by the time I was done fucking all the orgasms out of her sweet, hot pussy. Also, it's a Saturday, so being called into work is a bit of a piss-off. Being made to wait is even more infuriating. The office phone rings, so I hit speaker, assuming it's my father, finally calling me into the emergency meeting. It's not. It's my mother.
Hello, Bancroft. How are you this morning?
Phone conversations with my mother are fairly formal for whatever reason. She's a good person, but sometimes she gets far too caught up in the gossip that circulates in her friend pool. Most discussions include the latest scandal. I'm fine, waiting for my father to call me into this emergency meeting.
Yes, he shouldn't be long now. He just left the house.
He just left? He called me 2 hours ago, telling me I needed to be at the office immediately.
Yes, well, he was distracted.
He's on his way now. I cringe. Distracted has meanings I don't want to think too much about. Is that why you called, to tell me he's running late?
Oh, no, I wanted to make sure you're still able to come for dinner next weekend.
Of course, it's already marked on the calendar. Do you need me to bring anything?
It's being catered.
Okay. Of course it's being catered. My mom doesn't spend much time in the kitchen unless she's pouring a glass of wine. We always had a chef growing up, and a nanny or two made it possible for her to go to her fundraising meetings while me and my brothers went to our various lessons. Mine were always of the sports variety.
We're having a few friends join us, so it won't just be family.
Oh. I tap on the desk with my pen. I wonder who my mother is inviting and why. Is it possible for me to bring a date then? It's on a weekend, so it's unlikely that Ruby will even be able to attend since she works, so I'm not sure why I'm asking. There's silence on the other end of the line for a few seconds. Mimi? I didn't grow up calling her mom, although that's how I refer to her when I'm not in her presence.
It would be best if you didn't.
Won't Griffin be bringing Imogen?
Well, of course, she's his girlfriend.
So why can't I bring a date?
The Thorntons are coming.
I thought I'd managed to evade Brittany in the second date. Mom. She makes a disapproving tisking sound. I thought we already talked about this, I remind her.
You were ill last time. Brittany is a lovely girl.
Brittany is pampered and a pain in the ass. I've been avoiding her calls since I went out with her all those weeks ago. I'm seeing someone. I might as well be upfront about it. Maybe it will help allow me to evade more Brittany interactions.
Since when?
It's recent.
So it's not serious, then. Bringing her to dinner would make it awkward for Brittany, and I arranged this before you were seeing someone. I can't really change the plans now, and your father has business with her father.
She's imploring now. Of course there's business involved. My father can't do it any other way. I wish I didn't feel the need to cave for my mother, but it's not as though Ruby will be able to join me anyway. Fine, I'll do this for you, but it's the last time.
That's all I ask.
It's a dinner with family and a few friends, so it's not even technically a date. It's still frustrating. Another call interrupts the one with my mother. I'm hopeful it's my father. I'd like to get this meeting over with so I can get home to Ruby before she has to work tonight. I have to go. I have another call.
Okay. Thank you for making this easy for me. Have a good day. We'll chat soon, Banny.
Bye, Mom. I hang up before I can get angry with her. She knows how much I hate being called Banny. It's my father's personal assistant alerting me that the meeting will begin in 5 minutes in the conference room. Only 2 hours and 20 minutes later than I anticipated. I could have been in bed with Ruby this entire time. I gather my things and head down the hall. My father is already sitting at the head of the table. His assistant sets down a coffee and several folders. So, what's the emergency? I ask as I slide into a chair beside Griffin. One of the London properties has an issue. I'm suddenly uneasy. One of the ones I was working on? He shakes his head and I breathe a sigh of relief. My father hates errors. Lex was managing it. That's a surprise. I had no idea he was managing anything outside of the 4 hotels we'd been asked to oversee while we were there. Which hotel?
The Concord.
We'd stopped in there briefly so I could get acquainted with the building and the managerial staff while we were in the area. It's a well-established hotel, up to date, not in need of any real work as far as I knew. What's the problem? I didn't think we were working on that hotel.
We weren't supposed to until next year. It looks like some corners were cut regarding permits.
That's not good.
I have to wonder if this was what he was taking care of when he went back to London ahead of me. Lex slips into the boardroom looking rough. He drops into the chair beside our father.
Sorry I'm late. What'd I miss?
My father flips open the file folder and pushes it toward him.
Why don't you have a look for yourself?
Lex's smile drops and he blanches. 3 hours later, I'm still sitting in this meeting. The first hour was my dad chewing out Lex. There was nothing I could do to help him since I didn't know he was working on the project in the first place. The past 2 hours have been taken up with reviewing the original plans for the minor renovations to the ballroom and the indoor pool at the Concord, which weren't scheduled for another full year. Securing permits for this kind of upgrade shouldn't have been difficult. The indoor pool is where the problem seems to be. I'm barely listening at this point. It's already early afternoon. I don't dare send any messages or my father will likely shit a brick. He's in a foul mood. I'd really like some time to talk to Ruby. If I don't get out of here before 2, I'm not going to have enough time to get home before she leaves for work.
Isn't that right, Bancroft?
I look up from the paper I've been scribbling on. I've managed to draw a circle, with another circle inside it, and another inside that one. It looks remarkably like a breast.
I'm sorry, pardon?
My father looks annoyed. It's not good. I don't want to piss him off more than he already is.
You'll oversee the acquisition of the new permits.
I don't have the background on this project. He taps his pen on the desk 3 times in succession, then flips it into his palm. It's one of his little quirks. When he's angry or frustrated, it comes out through small, controlled body movements. That was definitely the wrong thing to say.
You have the basics from this meeting. I'll send Griffin along with you.
Griffin and I glance at each other. It seems to be as much of a surprise to him as it is to me.
I can fix this, Lexington says. I'll go on my own.
Our father turns his angry gaze on Lex.
You'll do nothing of the sort. You'll be here in the office reviewing permit code for as long as it takes to get this sorted out.
Lex's mouth flattens into a straight line, but he keeps his mouth shut. None of us dare say anything to contradict our father, at least not here where there are so many people to witness it.
You'll leave this evening.
Today?
Griffin and I ask at the same time. My father gives us the same hard look we used to get as kids when we'd gotten caught doing something we shouldn't.
This needs to be sorted out immediately, and we can't do it remotely. We need the investors to feel confident that we have the situation under control. How long are we going to be there?
For as long as it takes to iron things out. If you're quick, you could be back by the end of the week.
I grit my teeth. I don't want to go away again. I want to be in my condo with my pets and Ruby. We need to have a conversation. A real one. A serious one. Unfortunately, it looks like that's still on hold.
Chapter 19. I hate Brittany. Ruby. Awake to an empty bed, which isn't much of a surprise since morning has passed and afternoon approaches. My entire body is sore, thanks to the new addition to my workout routine in the form of Bancroft. That man can fuck like nobody's business. I stretch out, smiling, and call Bancroft's name. I'm greeted with silence. That's odd. It's Saturday, and he didn't say anything about having to go to the office. Throwing off the covers, I sit up, the muscle aches amplifying as I get out of bed, and pad, naked, down the hall to the kitchen. The French press sits on the counter half full. I touch the side. The coffee is cool, meaning it must have been made hours ago. Bancroft? I call again. I still get nothing. Maybe he's in his office, wearing headphones. He does that sometimes out of consideration, since my hours are so much later than his. I tiptoe over and peek around the corner. He's not there either. What the heck? Heading back to the kitchen, I root around in my bag until I finally find my phone. Maybe he went out to pick us up something to eat. He's considerate like that as well. The only messages I have are from Amy. She's been out of town for the past week on a honeymoon test run. That's right. She and Armstrong have gone away for a week to see if they like the location enough to return for their honeymoon. It's a Mills hotel, so I can't imagine they won't love it. I check the counter,
which is where I find one of Bancroft's rune-like scrawls. Emergency meeting. Not sure when I'll be back. Bane. I frown, disappointed that my nakedness will go to waste, and that the start to my day isn't going nearly as well as the end of my night. Scrolling through my phone, I check my messages from Amy. She returned from her pre-honeymoon test run, and we have a lunch date. I check the time. Crap doodles. I have less than an hour to get ready and meet her in Midtown. A shower is a must. I smell like Bancroft and sex. Firing a message off to let Amy know I'm on my way, I rush to my room to shower. 20 minutes later, I'm fresh and dressed. My hair is still damp, but it'll dry on the way. I slap on some makeup, grab my purse, and run out the door. Amy's already at the restaurant when I get there. She's never late for anything. She puts down her phone when I slide into the seat across from her.
I was just about to text you. How are you? How are things since Bancroft's been back? I feel like we haven't talked in forever.
She looks around, then leans closer and drops her voice. Has he walked around the condo shirtless? I feel badly that I've been riding Bancroft's disco stick for a week, and my best friend doesn't even know. Although, that's not really my fault, since she hasn't been around to tell. And I also feel bad that I haven't been honest with her about other things. So I tell her everything. Well, almost everything. We're in a public place, so there are things I'm not willing to say aloud for fear of someone overhearing. But I tell her about the job, and Bancroft coming to the club last week, and getting angry about my lie. The waiter brings us our lunches just before I get to the best part. I take a pause while he sets our plates in front of us. I've ordered steak frites, which are just French fries with a fancy name, and Amy has ordered a salad. They forgot your dressing, I point out.
I don't need it.
Without dressing, it's just a plate of leaves.
I like the natural flavors.
She waves her fork around. So, Bancroft drove you home. Then what happened? I drop the salad dressing issue and continue with my story. I censor out all the best parts, like the curling for orgasms and the dirty talk and the awesome blowjob I gave, and finish with, and then we had sex. I pop a fry into my mouth and wait. Amy stares at me for a few long seconds, unmoving. She glances around the restaurant and brings her hand up so no one can see what she says, even though she practically mouths the words.
You slept with him?
I nod.
Oh my God!
She exhales a breath, eyes wide and blinking, and sets down her fork.
You slept with him a week ago and didn't tell me until now?
She looks hurt, which is not what I want. I lean in closer and drop my voice, imploring her to understand. I haven't had a chance. You were away. This is the first time I've seen you since it happened, and I didn't want to tell you over the phone because, well, it's not over the phone kind of news. She sits back in her chair.
Was it just the once?
I shake my head.
How many times?
I shrug. I've lost count. A lot.
It sounds like your week was more exciting than mine,
she mutters.
So this is a relationship now?
I stab a fry with my fork. I don't know. We haven't talked about that yet.
You've been getting naked with each other for the past week, and you haven't had a relationship conversation yet?
Amy smooths her napkin out.
You're not really a fling kind of girl. Does he know that? Do you know if he wants a relationship?
I shrug again. I don't actually have an answer to that. The only conversations we've had about relationships were before he left, and maybe once over the phone when we discussed how difficult it would be to have a relationship when he was traveling all the time. But he's home now, and he hasn't mentioned traveling, Although we haven't been doing much in the way of talking this past week, outside of moans and orgasms, I consider how much time I've spent with him over the last several weeks. If I'm honest with myself, it's felt like a relationship since before he came back from the UK. I guess you need to talk to him and figure out if you're both on the same page, Amy says, pulling me out of my head. I nod. Do you think you are? I think so. Maybe? God, I hope casual hookups aren't his thing. I'm sure he wants the same thing you want. I guess now you'll really need to find your own apartment. Can you afford that yet? Amy pats my hand in a consoling gesture. I think I might be starting to panic a little. I can't live there anymore. It's not a question. It's just that reality is hitting me, and it's a lot like being smacked in the face with a giant penis. Bancroft's giant penis. It might be easier if you have your own place now that you're sleeping together. I nod, dumbly. She's 100% accurate on this. I can't live with Bancroft if we're in the beginning stages of dating, if that's even what's going to happen. Beyond that, my relying on him financially creates a power imbalance I'm not too keen on. I don't want to feel like my services are being bought, even if they're as incredible as he tells me they are. So? Huh? I've gapped out again. She mouths, "The sex," and then says, "Is it good?" I think about last night, about coming in from work at 3 a.m. and waking him up with a blowjob, and the 2-hour fuck marathon that then took place. Bancroft thoroughly enjoys testing out my flexibility. We've had sex in places and positions I'd never thought possible. And that mouth? Sweet Lord. The best? Her eyebrows shoot up. Really? What's he like? Intense. I lean in to whisper, "He has a very dirty mouth and excellent stamina. He can go for hours." Amy bites her lip and looks a little wistful. "Aren't you sore?" "Only in the best way possible. I'm pretty sure I'm ruined for any other man. I'll have this unreasonable bar to hold all other men to. Bancroft Mills and his dirty mouth, an amazingly large penis, are my new minimum standard." "Is he..." She trails off and does a few eyebrow raises. I raise my own in question. "Adequately endowed?" "More than," I reply. "More than?" She touches the necklace she's wearing. It's a gold chain with diamonds. Amy doesn't like yellow gold. She prefers white. I'm assuming the necklace was a gift from her thoughtful, clueless fiancé. "So much more." She swallows her mouthful of lettuce and leans in close. "How much more?" I have no idea why Amy is so interested in the size of Bancroft's penis. "Are you asking me for approximate dimensions?" She nods once. I look around the table for things that might be comparable. There's nothing. "Wider than a toilet paper roll and about yay long." I hold my hands apart and then widen the gap a bit until I get it just right. "Wow," Amy breathes. "Wasn't that uncomfortable?" "He's incredibly adept at foreplay." Her cheeks flush pink, and she looks down at her salad, pushing the dry leaves around. "It's never too late to trade in your current model for one with more girth, or length, or both." I spear a fry and bite the end off. Amy snorts and brings her hand to her mouth, eyes darting around. Embarrassed the sound came out of her, maybe. I miss the version of my friend who cared less about what people think. We should have gone to a non-posh restaurant, so we wouldn't be forced to have this conversation in embarrassed whispers. I wish I cared less, too. It's 2:30 in the afternoon by the time I get home, or back to Bancroft's condo. I'm nervous now. I've been enjoying the sex bubble we've been living in, but Amy has a point. We have to talk, and I have to make a plan to move out. I sincerely hope I haven't read things wrong, and that this is about more than sex. I think it is. Our conversations up until now have me hoping it is. The condo is the same as when I left it, which means Bancroft still isn't home. I should probably wash the sheets after last night's sexcapades. I stop at Francesca's cage first. She's been fed recently, by the look of things. Maybe Bancroft did it before he left for his emergency meeting. Hi, pretty girl. I nuzzle her head and carry her down the hall. When I get to Bancroft's room, I notice the bed isn't quite how I left it. It's still unmade, but there are a few items of clothing littering the mattress, namely the components that make up a suit. And his closet door's open. My stomach does a little flip, and I return to the kitchen, rummaging through my purse until I find my phone. I missed a call from him about 20 minutes ago. There's a voicemail.
Hey. Hi, Ruby. Look, I'm at the airport. I have to go back to London. There's an issue I need to take care of. I don't really know when I'm going to be back, but we need to talk. And it probably isn't a phone conversation.
There's a brief pause and a sigh.
We need to make some adjustments with our arrangement. This has all happened a bit faster than I expected. I think maybe... Fuck. I'll try to call when I'm in London.
My stomach feels like it's trying to jump out of my throat. This doesn't sound good. I sit down at the island and note the envelope propped up against the bananas. I blush at the memory of what I did with one yesterday afternoon in a bid to distract Bancroft when he was busy with a phone call. It resulted in me being bent over the island, spanked, and then fucked. The envelope has my name on it in his messy scrawl. I open it and find a wad of cash. Sliding the bills out, I count it twice. Jesus, he's left me $5,000. I try to rationally analyze the exorbitant amount of money, but based on the message, it sounds a lot like he's intending to pay me for sex. I'm still holding Francesca. She's squirming to get out of my arms. I give her a couple of pets and set her on the floor. Maybe I'm reading into things. Maybe I'm being dramatic. Maybe he's just being preemptive in case he's gone longer than he anticipates. As I pass Bancroft's retro answering machine, I note the flashing red number 1. There's a message. I hit play.
Hi, Banny. It's Brittany. I just heard from Mimi and I couldn't get through on your cell, so I thought I'd try this number instead. I'm so sorry you had to go away on business this week. Such a disappointment when you just got back. I really hope you'll be back in time for dinner this weekend. But don't worry if you're not. We can always reschedule our date. Mimi said you're just as excited as I am about being able to spend time together again. I can't wait to pick up where we left off last time. Call me when you can.
I stare at the machine. Hit rewind and then hit play again, listening to the message a second time. Then I listen to the voicemail from Bancroft. There's really no guessing anymore. I can't believe he's been screwing me all over his condo all week, telling me my pussy is his, while he's been planning a date with another woman. Brittany, of all people. I listen to the message again, looking for some sign that this isn't what I think it is. Has he been playing me this entire time? I remember our conversation about Brittany back when I moved in here, how he said she wasn't that bad. Did he have sex with her that night, after he kissed me? Has he been talking to her the way he's been talking to me while he's been away? It sure as hell seems like it, based on her enthusiasm. And what the hell does she mean picking up where they left off? Fucking asshole. Talking to me about trust and honesty, and here he is, screwing me, and he'll probably be screwing Brittany this weekend. There really is no question now. I need to find a new place to live. The sooner, the better. Chapter 20. New Digs. Ruby. Everything happens for a reason. I hate that saying, even if it's true most of the time. It's something people say to you when crap luck slaps you in the face. It's not their crap luck, so it's easy to throw out a useless, annoying saying in an attempt to make a person feel better. Here's the truth. Telling someone everything happens for a reason doesn't actually make them feel less crappy. In fact, it usually makes them feel worse. Which is why I'm so glad I have a best friend like Amy. As soon as I stop crying, it takes a good 20 minutes to get myself under control. I might be pissed off, but I'm not angry enough that this doesn't hurt. A lot. I call her and tell her what happened. Are you fucking kidding me? Amy rarely swears these days. Her anger makes me feel so much better. I need a new apartment. Like tomorrow. Do you want to stay here until you do? I know there isn't much space, but is it better than staying there? Why don't you pack your things, and we'll get you out tomorrow? What about Armstrong? What about him? What are you going to tell him? He's going to ask why I'm staying with you. He won't know. He never comes here. My mattress isn't soft enough, and I don't have much space. I'll probably be at his place twice next week. I can even try for more. But he's got this thing about having his space. At least you won't have to sleep on the couch or an air mattress those nights. Do you want me to come get you tonight? No, that's not necessary. He's not even in the country, and he won't be back tonight, or at least for a couple of days. So there's no point. I need to pack, anyway. Okay. I have to work in the morning. Do you need me to take time off so I can help you? I have a shift tomorrow night, but I have the day free. I can see about getting an Uber van or something. She's quiet for a few seconds. Oh, what about Bancroft's truck? Are the keys there? You're a genius. I don't know why I didn't think of that. I bet I can get the people who work in this building to cart all my stuff down to the truck, too. I'm sure you can, and you should. I'm so angry I don't even think twice about using Bancroft's truck without his permission. I spend the rest of the afternoon packing. Mostly it's me throwing stuff into suitcases and then crying when I can't get them closed. I'm so stupid. I made this into something it wasn't. I was convinced there was more between us, but obviously I was wrong. I still have to go to work, which sucks. It doesn't matter how long I lie with cucumber slices over my eyes. They're still red and puffy. I guess Bancroft has turned out to be another last-name-first asshole. I should know better than to equate sex with feelings. I sleep like crap and get up after just a few hours of fitful sleep. No matter, I need to get out of this place. I find Bancroft's truck keys, and I call the front desk guy to bring a trolley or something up so I can move my boxes out. Miss Blackwood comes out to see what all the noise is about. Precious is tucked under her arms. She snarls at me. It's everything I can do not to snarl back.
Oh, Renee, are you moving?
She looks past me into the condo. I take a step back and close the door halfway, since Francesca's cage is in the living room. I don't correct her. She gets my name wrong every time, although she always manages to get the first letter right. I am. It was so nice living across the hall from you. I say with fake enthusiasm, holding out my hand. She accepts the handshake, although she appears a little uncertain about the contact, which is perfect. Once she disappears into her condo, I flip her the bird. It takes 15 minutes for Stan, the front desk guy, to load all my boxes onto the trolley. While he takes them down and transfers them to the truck, I check on Francesca. Except she's not in her cage. I have a moment of panic, or several moments, as I search the condo for her. I find her tucked into Bancroft's pillow. I cry tears of relief that I didn't manage to lose her. Of all the things I'm going to miss about living in Bancroft's condo, apart from Bancroft, I'll miss his ferret. Francesca, not the one in his pants. I cry while playing with her in his sheets. I know I'll see her again before Bancroft returns, but I'm emotional, and I'm going to miss her. After he returns, there's no guarantee I'm ever going to see Franny again. It's also sort of symbolic of losing Bane, who I never really had in the first place. I change Tiny's water and feed her a cricket, even though I did it 2 days ago. I'm a puffy-eyed mess by the time I'm ready to climb Bancroft's truck. Stan looks a little uneasy as I try to navigate the truck while still sniffling. Thankfully, it has a backup camera with one of those beeper things that tells me when I'm getting too close to other objects. That seems to happen a lot in this beast. I manage to get out of the underground parking without hitting anything. Driving a truck in the streets of New York is insane. I have no idea how Bancroft manages this thing. It's huge, and the lanes are narrow. The nice thing about it is that if I want to change lanes and no one is letting me go, I can just edge my way in, and they really don't have a choice but to let it happen. It helps that I don't really care if the truck ends up with a ding. I have a key to Amy's apartment, so it's not a big deal getting it in once I arrive at her place. Carting all my stuff up to the 12th floor is a bit of a pain in my ass, since it takes 5 trips, plus my luggage. I line my pitiful pile of boxes against the only available wall. Once I'm done, I park the truck in the underground garage. Luckily, Amy's building has one as well, and I get a pass for it. I use my sex money from Bane to pay for that. I'm not driving it back today. I'll do it tomorrow morning. I can't imagine Bancroft will be back by then. By the time I'm done, I'm sweaty and hungry. I check Amy's fridge for food. I'm sorely disappointed. Her food selection is minimal. There's lettuce and some fruit. But I'm used to living with a former rugby player who loves his carbs and meat. Plus, I'm working a very active job these days. I need the calories to maintain the booty I'm currently rocking. Amy lives on the fringe of the theater district, much like Bancroft, so her apartment isn't all that far away. It's a fabulous area, and this apartment costs a mint. But she makes great money where she works, so it's affordable for her. Unless I manage to snag a prime role in a Broadway production, there's no damn way I'll ever